It is time for the first Lakeville Journal report of 2020. In the center studio, we have Cynthia Hauswinter. Cynthia, good morning.
Happy new decade.
Happy new decade to you, and happy new decade to you, Janet.
And to you. Good morning.
And I just want people to know that the newspaper, I have scurriously the past 2 days been looking for
Yeah.
Well, actually, I had somebody else curiously doing it until this morning when I went around trying to find it. And it's in the process of being delivered right now, right?
It is right now. You know, the schedule this year was really hard to manage because of the Wednesday holidays.
Absolutely.
And so our printer does not, you know, certainly they do get New Year's Day off. And so that would usually be the day they would deliver. We got the papers to them earlier, but that didn't mean their schedules would change dramatically. So anyway, they got them to us first thing this morning, and our drivers are out there right now.
So, and for those of you that haven't received it yet, it's on the way. That's all I can say.
It is.
I found,
and, you know, we have it up online.
Finally,
our website died, but outside of that, we have up online PDFs of the actual paper. So you can go online and see the papers for January 2nd for Lakeville Journal and Millerton News.
All right, and that's exactly what I did this morning when I got in. I said, boy, it's going to be awful hard asking questions, but I'm glad it's all. And, yeah, and it's going to be the same next year, too, because these middle-of-the-week holidays are just, they just really ruin things.
Next year's all right.
Yeah.
Next year, I think it's on a Friday because we have a leap year.
Right? So we're done.
Okay, that's
it's
good.
It's just this
Thank
year.
God.
Yeah.
That's good because I just can't take starting the week over every twice a week.
No, twice a week. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, nobody knows what day it is right now.
Correct.
It's very fortunate we're all here and know where we are.
Well, sort of, anyway.
So sort of.
Well, we'll go right to the paper, and I'm looking at the banner headline. Community supports local journalism. You've raised enough money to go through the next calendar year, and that should give you enough time to square things away.
That's right. And the first thing we're doing is what we had been planning to do if this was successful, was to rebuild our website in January and February. Well, it was thrust upon us at the end of December when the website software in its aged state finally gave way, and we will be working on that first and are very glad to be doing it. Very cannot be more appreciative of our readers who stepped forward to support us. And we will move forward and keep everyone informed of what is happening and what changes we will be implementing. But you'll see them as time goes on.
Right. And I'd like to add that we've raised the basic of what we need, but people shouldn't feel like, oh, well, that's it. I don't need to become members. We appreciate not only the support of knowing that people out there want us to be here, but, you know, if we can raise a little bit more money, there are a couple of things that we could do that we'd like to do.
It's called continuing support is what it's called.
Yeah,
and you know what's the great time about rebuilding your website is this is the perfect time of year to do it, because this is the, if there's any time where this it's the lightest in news, it is right now.
Yes.
Right. So, usually.
But some things get in the way of that, but usually it is. So let's go on to the other stories, because it's kind of like a year in review. A person who is out Nancy Johnson, Nancy Johnson, and that is our representative in Washington, Representative Hayes.
Jahana Hayes has been fantastic and is here all the time. And as you noted, Nancy Johnson, who was a Republican, was here quite a bit and was very instrumental in helping to get that depot rebuilt. Jahana Hayes, who is a Democrat, has been fantastic. We see her all the time. And to her credit, she generally doesn't let us know when she's coming. She just comes because she wants to meet with people. She wants to help out with things. And she's started a program called Congressman in Your Corner. And we're trying to do listings whenever they let us know so that people can come to Jahana Hayes' aides and ask for help with federal government issues that are knotty.
All right, now slide over to the other side of the page. Cricket Valley fears and protests continued in 2019, and they will undoubtedly continue in 2020.
They're ongoing right now, and there's a story in this week's Millerton News, I believe, about litigation that's related to the last protest. The plant is scheduled to go online in January. It's a multi-million dollar plant. They're claiming it's going to be the cleanest burning plant in America. It's gas-powered electric. And it was built in part as a response to the closing of the Indian Point nuclear plants down in New York City, the New York area.
All right. Another story that is a big story in our area, and that is high-speed internet service in our area. Not that it's not available. It is, but it's only available in limited areas.
Right. So like 35% of our readership doesn't get high-speed internet, which is why when people say to us, well, why don't you just go online and skip the printing and distribution? We say, you know, a lot of our readers don't have internet and are not really able to read the paper online. I would say at meetings that I go to, people are pretty strongly divided, 50-50, where they feel strongly that the key to survival for this Northwest Corner area is to have better high-speed internet and phone. And then the other half of the people say they absolutely do not want it. They're worried about the radiation from antennas. They're worried about the aesthetics of the antennas. It's a very interesting, strong face-off among community members.
And what's interesting, more, if people have Wi-Fi in their homes, they have the same problems. But the way it's going to be settled out here is through existing towers putting up 4G signals. I'm not a big believer in 5G, even though it's starting to take over. But wireless is the way it's going to have to be, or from satellite.
And so, even though our governor had said every town in the state of Connecticut is getting 5G, people who are experts in high-speed communications are like, that's probably not going to happen. It's a little expensive for those companies to be bringing out that many antenna to the Northwest Corner.
It is. And if they don't do it the right way, they don't think the 5G coverage only goes a couple of miles instead of like 15, 20, or 30 miles right now. So
it's
a problem that's going to be very interesting to see how it's solved.
It's probably going to be some new technology that's going to leapfrog over.
One can hope.
the way things go these days.
All right. Love the picture, story by Patrick Sullivan on the front page. The bear population, bears making themselves more comfortable in 2019. But you know, the efforts of towns like Salisbury to curb the arrival of bears really proved successful, as this summer was totally different than last.
And I have to say, people keep saying to me, oh, I had this bear and it came onto the porch. And I keep saying, so where's your bird feeder? And they always have a bird feeder and they always leave it out. And a lot of people say, well, we bring it in at night. And it's like, well, the bears are pretty much sleeping at night. They're really actually out during the day. So, you know, bird feeders, stuff, and like people, we all have to do our part to discourage them. That includes keeping garbage and birdseed out of
here. What we say to people also is, I've seen pictures now from people saying, oh, shouldn't the bears be hibernating? Bears will not hibernate as long as they have a food source.
Yeah.
They just won't. So if you've got a bear around your house, that means there's a food source that they're finding very easily accessible. That's the main way if you want to cut that down. Another story that you've got on the front page about marijuana and vaping use.
So, of course, Theory Wellness, that had opened last year around this time up in Great Barrington, continues to be extremely popular. And I was talking to some friends yesterday on New Year's Day, and one of them said her brother had come to town and had taken a strong loop to make sure to stop in the Great Barrington. So people are definitely looking at it as a destination. We'll see what the long-term impact of that is.
Yeah, for Great Barrington, the short-term impact is going to be very good money-wise, but we'll see we'll see, because there's going to be so many in between Sheffield and Great Barrington.
Lots popping up. Yeah.
That will pop up. All right, now we go on to the next page, the regional page. I see, you know, and it's something that I'm not a big recycler, but I have become much more in my old age. But holiday gifts now, I do recycle the boxes that they come in.
Right. It's complex,
like
too.
Yeah.
The rules of it are changing all the time. And Leah Walgamuth is my my recycling correspondent and does a beautiful job. And she's been talking to Brian Bartram at the Salisbury Share and Transfer Station, which is a very advanced recycling program. And a lot of the things that you think are recyclable are not, such as gift wrap. Gift wrap does not go in the paper recycling bin. And people, if you're having big parties, remember that you can't just throw out your plastic beverage containers. You have to triple rinse them. And if you don't, you contaminate the whole load. So it's important to read this article. If you're interested in recycling and you want to do it well, please do read Leah's article.
And we spoke about, she's coming to the Scoville Library on the 15th.
Yes, for the Congressman on the Corner.
That's on to the next page. I want to go to page A3. The regional plan for middle school sports is come to fruition, and we'll see what happens in the next year.
Yes, and Willie Yon, who's extraordinary, who most of us in the region have known since he was a young boy, is just this amazing human being now, and just graduated from the University of Connecticut as a professional ball player. And we were lucky enough to have him writing for us during the period when between the baseball season and the beginning of spring training. So he's been covering the middle school sports program very ably, and in touch a lot with Ann McNeil, the athletic director for the region and for the high school, who's behind this plan. A lot of pushback from the town of Kent, which is planning to hire a lawyer to see if they can separate from the program. It's part of the ongoing conversations that we always have in Region 1 about what happens when five towns want to do something and the sixth town doesn't. Complex.
Now, I like the next two stories that are done by Willie. First of all, the first one on the Hoosie boys soccer team, almost a great season.
Right.
And then below that, though, a historic season for Hoosie girls hoop.
And for girls soccer, too. So we have three stories from Willie again, who is great athlete and very and still in touch with the athletes at Housatonic Valley Regional High School. So he summed up the three seasons. They were, you know, we're not a huge sports paper. Hoosie is not a huge, I wouldn't say they have a ton of huge sports victories, but they have a very active sports program, and it's very important to them to be able to offer sports to their students in a wide range of disciplines. So some pretty good results this year, and read about it from Willie.
All right. And like we said, there's just a bunch of sports stories there. And Housatonic is a sports high school, but with a dwindling population.
Right.
Sports is still an important part, but has become a little less simply because the less students you have, especially when you're down to 300 and some. It's tough. It's tough to do everything that you need to do at school. Another story that has been with us for a while and is not settled yet, the dispute in Falls Village over a couple of inches.
It's the mirror of the story about the middle school sports, which is the town of Falls Village, which tends to be very independent, as Kent also tends to be. A lot of pushback against the Region 1 superintendent and some of the programs there. And that's ongoing, and as you said, happening in little drips and drops.
I was going to play Pete Seeger inch by inch, but I figured I won't. Anyways, planning for the 21st century in 2019.
And so this was a Falls Village story, but it's true of all of our regions where they're looking at what can. So population is dropping. The full-time population especially is dropping. School population is dropping. And towns are looking at what they can do to attract new residents to the area. And, of course, high-speed internet and phones is one of the big attractors. And one of the big conversations people have is, are having towers a disincentive for people to move here, or is it an incentive for people to move here? And I would say there's no real clarity on that answer, but definitely looking at programs, at housing, at communication as ways to attract new people to the region.
Well, the Patrick Sullivan story, conflict between towns and school leaders.
Right, the Region 1 school district story.
Yeah, and now rental housing in 2019 in Falls Village.
Right. So there had been a proposal by a group, a volunteer group in the town, to put together an apartment complex on a dirt road over by the river. And the idea was it's walking distance from the school. It'd be an opportunity to give teachers a place to live in rentals. And strongly opposed by several people in the neighborhood who felt it was an inappropriate development for there. So it sounds like they're coming back trying to do a smaller plan. And we just really strongly want to encourage them to make sure to fully include the public, because these kind of things never succeed if the public doesn't support it.
All right. Inside Scoop, uprooting addiction and understanding it.
We did our survey over the summer, what people wanted to see, and they wanted to see more profiles. And so what we're trying to do is a column series called Inside Scoop, where we interview somebody, talk about their life, talk about what led them to the new, interesting, newsworthy thing they're doing. Tori Jado, very interesting person, has done this beautiful film called Uprooting Addiction, where she worked with a counselor who's in the area, whose name is Hope Payson, who looks a lot at the root cause of trauma and how that leads to addiction. And she has a new film out. It's going to be screening in the area. We'll try to do listings when it's shown. It's very powerful.
And some stories out of Cornwall from the principal at Cornwall Consolidated School, Louving. The Bend opened to the public and planning for the town's future.
Right, again, planning for the future. And one of the parts of that that's important is Cornwall Consolidated School, which had been, when I first moved here, the big attractor school. So much in growth that they had to build on additions to it. Now is really shrinking to the point where a couple of years ago the graduating class was two students. Mike Croft has been a very able principal there, is leaving to take a job closer to his home where his wife also works. And so they're looking for a new leader for that school.
And down below, the septic plan continues in West Cornwall.
Yeah, and, you know, people laugh about these little, in infrastructure and capital maintenance projects, but this is a big deal for Little West Cornwall, which is so scenic and so beautiful, but there's no growth possible there without a septic system. And I think we see this in Millerton as well, that the septic, which seems so basic and like, well, just fix it, is not that easy to fix and is really an impediment to growth.
And let's move on to Kent. A sidewalk plan is beginning to take shape in Kent in the year 2019.
And again, these little things seem like it should be very straightforward, like, well, let's put a sidewalk in and repair the ones that are broken. Not so simple. So lots and lots of meetings, and they finally resolved it just in time for a new Board of Selectmen to come in. Bruce Adams did a very good job of pulling that through against a lot of conversation about it.
And they did have their first Selectmen's meeting in Kent without Bruce.
They did. And interestingly, the two people who ran for first selectman are both on the board. Jean Speck is first selectman. Ed Mattson, who had run against her, is regular selectman, as in most towns in the area except for Sharon. And I think Salisbury, the first selectman candidate, pushes onto the board if they have the majority of votes.
Yeah. And in Sharon, yeah, it's not. I mean, you run for first selectman.
You win or you lose.
Yeah, or you lose. Yeah. Yeah.
And same in Salisbury.
Yep. The depot, finally in 2019, fully blossomed.
I think that as I researched this story, the train station in North Canaan that burned down, I often forget, and people also often forget, the fire that burned down the depot happened about 3 weeks after the September 11th terror attacks in 2001, and it's as long as it's taking to rebuild downtown New York, the scale of what they're building is so enormous, and yet it's taken us 18 years to get the depot back, but it's back and it's doing great, and the brewery that's there, very successful, very popular, and we feel that that's got a good future. And then part of the original plan for that building was it's now owned by the Connecticut Historic Railroad Association, and they wanted to put a railroad museum in that finally has opened, and people should go visit. It's cute.
All right. And a story that has not gone away in the year and probably won't go away for a little while, the Metcalf paving appeal awaiting a judge's decision in Torrington.
Right. Ben Metcalf, who is a Salisbury resident, had wanted to expand his asphalt operation in East Canaan, which is partly industrial but also partly very rural and residential, and boy, has there been a strong grassroots opposition to this. And so that's making its way through the courts, and we'll see how it turns out. So far, he's winning.
And the highway project in North Canaan has moved along into 2019.
Right, and of course, when we talk about highways, we talk about the main roads that run through our towns. You know, you often think at this holiday season, people come up from the city, and they seem to think that our roads are for walking, and I always want to say, you know, that's a state highway. Route 7 is a state highway. You wouldn't walk on a highway in New York City, so, or in New York State.
Just stand by the side of Mountainside Cafe one day and try to cross the road, and just you'll get an idea, even though we're out in the middle of nowhere. They're going 50 miles an hour. And
it's curvy.
Yeah. All right, on to the next page. The Green Project, one of the most successful municipal projects I've seen in a long time. They drained it, they did it over, and it's going to be all set for the springtime.
Largely run by a committee of women, including, I think, Betsy Hall.
Yep.
And Linda Amerigi, and beautifully handled. They better watch out, or they're going to be getting more capital projects pushed their way.
Ella Clark retiring after 31 years.
I don't believe it. Clark is always so busy and so active helping people in the area who are in need of support, and she's retired from the town of Sharon, but I'm sure she'll still be helping people.
New face on the Sharon Board of Selectmen is Jessica Fowler, decided to go to the Finance Board.
Yep, a nice young face, Casey Flanagan.
And in Salisbury, now, we supposedly have new regs that are going to clear the way for affordable housing and maybe to the answer to the Chinese restaurant problem.
Which is no longer a Chinese restaurant, of course, and has been largely abandoned. That property's been for sale. They're asking an enormous amount of money for it. That has been a disincentive to people who've been interested in buying it. The town is looking at taking it over. It looks like the regulations are now shifted so that that can be possible.
All right. And you've got a big story by Patrick Sullivan, how Americans learned to distrust their government.
Hamish Lutris is a professor at a small college here in Connecticut, and he's done a number of talks in the Salisbury area. And Patrick, who goes to a lot of talks, and I must say is extremely fussy, says that he feels this guy is one of the best speakers he's ever heard. Interesting story about a talk he gave at Noble Horizons, sort of talking about the unraveling of the relationship between Americans and their government.
Also now, in 2019, crossing lights in Salisbury.
After a fatal that had happened about a year ago, John Polk's wife, Barbara, killed walking across the street in front of the, you know, speaking again, that's a state highway. And she had crossed the street and was hit by a car. It was, I think, in the evening. And so tragic. What a tragic loss. And then somebody else got hit, but was not horribly injured this year. But Tom Schachtman, who also was hit crossing the road in the crosswalk a couple of years ago, and John Pogue really took a strong message to the town government that they wanted to have crossing lights there and were successful.
All right, a nice little reminder, the Salisbury Winter Sports Association ski jumps coming up in February, but also there's the other ticking time bomb, the regulations to control race car operations of racetracks. We're really bound for a Supreme Court settlement really any day now.
Right, and it's going to be a huge big deal, not just for the town of Salisbury and the village of Lime Rock, but for the whole area. Car racing is a big deal here. If you were at the Ford versus Ferrari talks afterward at the movie house, and Skip Barber was there in San Posey, there are a lot of people who really, really love the race car industry here and are employed by it and supported or moved here for it. There's also a very strong contingent of people who are opposed to the track and want to shut it down. So it'll be interesting to see what the outcome of that is. I want to point out on the obit page, Dolly Beard has passed away. That's, I would say, one of those obits where I've had a lot of people mentioning it to me. She was a big Salisbury band person. Her service is January 4th. We have her obituary this week.
And Butch Sherwood, frankly, Butch Sherwood. There's obituary is there. Okay, we'll go on to now the editorial page, looking back and, more importantly, ahead.
Right. We always like to take stock of where we're at this time of year, all of us. Some of us make resolutions. Some of us just think about how we'd like to change some things and are too superstitious to even make resolutions because we're afraid of breaking them. But whatever our approach, it is good to do that, and we're doing that with the events in our towns and how we've seen our towns evolve over this past year and what we expect for next year. So do give that a read.
And looking back in time, I love that. I love the column Turning Back the Pages. At Lakeville, W.P. Bradley is harvesting 10 inches or more of ice on his own pond. The sling is reported as fairly good. Okay.
I mean,
back
really.
In the day.
And yeah, this is the same time of year, remember. Norma Galais, who pulls this column together for us, goes to the same week, and that's amazing.
And you've got your columns as well. Airport decision is needed, and war is still a racket.
Yeah. Right. This is from Chris Powell, who always finds something interesting to write about. So this week, actually, we consolidated our viewpoint and opinion pages into one page so we could put on the other page an update on our membership model. If you look at the page next to opinion, it says, with gratitude. That is an opinion in itself. We are extremely grateful to our readers who have stepped up to support us, and we have our listing up to December 20th. So we will update that again because we've reached our original goal as of December 31st, but here we are up to December 20th. We had taken in $86,464.51 to be exact, and here you will see listed all those who want it to be and their categories. So thanks again. Please do read this, and please don't hesitate to become a member.
All right, and once again, there's also pages the changes at Sharon Hospital, invasive ash borer.
The invasive ash borer is a big deal. I want to point that out. There's a guy named Sam Frayden who lives here in Sharon who has a really good Instagram page. And he posted a picture of a tree and said, like, wow, the bears aren't hibernating yet, and they're really trashing this tree in my yard. So I said, send me the pictures. And I sent them to Eileen Fielding at Audubon and Tim Abbott, our Nature's Notebook columnist, who's so active with Houston Valley Association, where he works. And they both said immediately, it's woodpeckers stripping away the bark, trying to get at the emerald ash borer larva. And this is a blight that is equal to the Dutch elm disease or the chestnut blight that wiped out so many trees in our area and is looking to kill really millions of trees in the United States. So if you see those signs, you want to get busy injecting the rest of the trees on your property and cut down and take away the diseased elm. And Tim Abbott sent me a column he did last spring explaining exactly what the emerald ash borer is. And Sam had said he was disappointed we didn't say Ashtastrophe or Ashmageddon, so I'll say it. But a lot of people don't like, don't like it when we joke about the trees. This is a big deal. So.
All right. We have about a minute and a half left. Want to go to Compass?
For Compass? Okay. So this week we have Patrick writing about if you're shut in the bad weather, horrible films that he's seen and loved. And the reason to read this column is not necessarily because you're going to watch these movies, but because Patrick's so funny about it. We have Alexander Wilburn talking about the Golden Globes, which are coming up, I think, January 5th. And it's a big deal this year for small theaters because a number of the top contestants in the Golden Globe races are films that were made specifically for Netflix and for streaming but had to be shown in a theater, and what that means for the future of small movie houses if a lot of the top films are not, if you don't have to go to a theater to see them. Alex spoke to Carol Sadlin at the Movie House. We also have a preview of Anne Makepeace's upcoming film. It's called 1,000 Pieces of Gold. She wrote it in the 1980s, and it's a fascinating, very feminist-oriented film, but a real adventure story about a Chinese woman who's sold by her father into marriage. It's not really marriage. She ends up being taken to the United States and building a beautiful life for herself, but it's a struggle.
All right, and I'll tell not to worry of the movie theaters because sooner or later Netflix and Amazon, which now offer their movies at the normal monthly prices, will change that,
right.
And you'll have to pay for it. And there's nothing like seeing, there's nothing like seeing a movie on the big screen.
Right, if they offer it to the theaters. Yeah. So let's hope that they continue to make that a possibility.
All right, so that is a Lakeville Journal. And as we say, if you are out and you haven't seen a journal on the newsstands yet, it's in the process of being delivered. So just be a little patient.
Or if you're out, it might even be there.
It might even be there. And please be kind to our drivers. It's not their fault.
All right, we'll see you guys again next week.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Take care. That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal here on Robin Hood Radio.